And his family is rich in history, Georgia history, Southern history. And he's going to give us some highlights of his life and memories that he remembers. So I guess I should start the questioning.
Sorry to be quick.
No, you're interested. Okay. Where were you born?
Well, I was born in Dalton, Georgia, December 17th, 1954.
And your family background, just a synopsis of your rich family history?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you mean with the skeletons or without?
Whatever you prefer.
Okay. Well, our family first settled in North Georgia, I guess, around 1835. John Hamilton of the New York, upper state New York Hamiltons, moved south with his wife, and I think at that time one son, into the North Georgia area about 1835, and that's my mother's side of the family. My father's side of the family was Tennessee and Kansas, so we've been in the area, and they moved into the Kansas area and then to Tennessee. Probably about the mid-1800s, so we've been around a little while on both sides.
And you have some family members that were in the Civil War, part of the Civil War, I think?
Well, John Hamilton's, he had five sons, and it's really kind of remarkable. All five sons went off to serve in the War Between the States, and all five of them came back, and none the worse for wear, except for Great Uncle Tom, which has always been thrown up as an example to us to stay away from drink, because Great Uncle Tom came back and his sweetheart had married another and climbed into a bottle and never climbed out. So he was kind of the family example as far as what that can do for you. But it is very remarkable that and I don't know if that's an indication of their bravery and skill or their cowardice, but all five of John Hamilton's sons came back from the war.
The time period that we're talking about is 1950-1970 now, and I know you were born after 1950, so. I guess what are your first memories of the time period beginning in the 1950s? Maybe the polio vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do remember that. That's one of the few things that I think I clearly remember from the '50s. I remember all of us as a family getting in the car and going down to the local school and having the sugar cube vaccination. My oldest brother, Bruce, came down with polio, but he was diagnosed very, very early on by our family physician, and it was caught in time. So he was partially disabled for a time, I think about 6 to 8 months. But after that and after the recuperation, he was fine. So he was caught very, very early on. And because of that, our family stayed with that family doctor until that family doctor died. My parents were so grateful that he had caught that very early on. But I do remember that, and let's see, from the 50s, I remember Eisenhower. I remember television.
What were your first TV? Do you remember that?
Well, I do remember. I am, unfortunately, old enough to remember some Howdy Doody. I do remember that. I remember Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. I remember some of the early children's programming. Other than that, I think it kind of blends into the early 60s, because then I remember the first color television set and all of that. But as far as 50s, I do remember Eisenhower. I do remember watching. My mother and father were very politically active, and I do remember some coverage. I don't think it was live. It may have been of certain conventions and or I guess that would be the 60 convention. I do remember them staying up to watch some special type of political news broadcast, and I remember seeing Eisenhower. I remember him on television.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember Grace Kelly and Prince Rainier?
No, I probably too young. Yeah, I was too young to really be interested.
Well, you've got to remember Elvis.
No, I really don't. The first musical type celebrity memory that I had was of the Beatles, the Ed Sullivan Show. So I don't really
see.
Remember
I loved that. Elvis. Loved Elvis. Of course, that was the late 50s. But
I do remember my older brothers playing all of the popular tunes of the day, and I remember the music coming from their rooms. I remember the music, but I don't specifically remember Elvis. I don't think they really listened to Elvis.
You didn't go see his first movie. I guess you had to be a young girl growing up.
Yeah.
Because we went to every Elvis movie there ever was. You know, got his glossy 8x10 and all that
right,
kind of stuff.
Right, right. I remember going
cut
to
cut our hair short, you know, in order to look like Elvis.
Right. All the guys wanted to look like one of the Beatles. But I do remember going to a Frankie Avalon and that Funicello movie, but that's getting out of the 50s and the 60s.
Stayed a long time. I guess we get closer to the Civil Rights Movement, 1957. The main thing I remember, not I don't even remember any of the dates, but the main thing was in the paper my parents talking about Little Rock and the trying to desegregate Little Rock. Right. Any thoughts with that?
You know, at that age, my earliest thoughts about the Civil Rights Movement, of course, growing up in a small southern town, I was raised in an environment, there was no racial hatred or any real apparent prejudice. I was kind of raised in an environment where these folks were down on their luck and had been given a bad deal on the cards, and that we really should try to do what we can to help them out. And I know probably a lot of the black activists would say that's a very patronizing kind of position, but that's kind of the environment that I grew up in. I do remember at that age, I do remember separate water fountains, but I didn't see the sinister nature of that. To me, that just, okay, well, that's the way it is. You know, just as much as if you go to the barbershop, there's a Coke machine in the corner. It's just some normal part of life. So I don't really...
Blacks got on the back of the bus.
Well, we didn't have buses, you
see,
know.
We did in mine, so they sat on... I didn't know why they sat on the back,
right.
But I knew that blacks
right.
sat on the back and whites sat up front. Separate bathrooms.
Right.
Remember separate bathrooms?
I don't remember the separate... the only thing I remember is in the department stores, the two different water fountains.
I remember that.
But like you say, you just assumed that that's the way it was. You didn't really understand any kind of sentiment.
When we were in high school, I was in high school in the 60s, there was a guy there that we called Jew Baby. Well, that was just his name, just like your name might have been Wet Junior or something like that. And not until I was older did I realize that he was Jewish and that they called him that because he was Jewish.
Right.
If I were to call him that today, I just die, you know.
Yeah.
But that's just what we called him by, and there was no malice,
right.
You know, that we
right.
knew. I know there's a lot of prejudice in our family. In my family, there was a lot of prejudice. But, you know, I never knew it. I saw it around me, but, you know, there was just nothing there that I felt.
Right. Yeah, we lived in two older homes, actually on the same street, a very old street, closer to the center of town, and the railroad tracks in the area beyond was very close. And I remember there would be black families that would come up and ask my mother or dad if they could pick pecans out of the yard, and the kids would come around back and we'd get on the bag swing. And actually, I had friendships because I wasn't in a, you know, subdivisions were just then really starting to go in our community. And where I was, there really wasn't a lot of kids to play with. And, you know, I struck up friendships with, you know, a lot of black kids. And I didn't think anything of it. And certainly, you know, my parents didn't dissuade me from that. My mother would fix up a big pitcher of lemonade and bring it out to the back. And, you know, we just had a great time. And they were always welcome in the house. I say they, you know. But, I mean, it seemed normal to me as a kid. And that was kind of the environment that I was in. It wasn't until another friend from school came over one day and took me off to the side. They were there, and we were having a great time, and he took me off to the side and, you know, said, why are you letting those use the N-word, which I was always taught, you never, that's just not a word to use. Why are you letting them play in your yard? And to me, I was very naive about it. You know, I said, well, why not? You know, we were having a fun time, you know.
Somebody to play with.
Right, and I guess that was the early 60s, and that was really my first exposure to the sinister side of that separation. I was raised by two black nuns, and in that day and time, and I'm sure you remember, is that a man that had a moderate income, supporting a family, the wife didn't have to work, and there was extra money to have that kind of help. You could have someone to work in the yard, you could have someone to come in once a week and iron clothes, you could, and so I had, you know, two black nannies, and my earliest recollections and for many years of my childhood was that that black people were absolute sages. You know, they were the smartest and wisest people that I knew. I was raised on Uncle Remus stories, and to me there was no smarter sage type person than Uncle Remus. My first exposure to it was through my peers that would make comments, and then I started to understand the sinister nature behind that separation, because that's why shows the play Driving Miss Daisy it strikes close to home for me, because they were like family, but yet they weren't. And we had Harry that worked in the yard, and Roosevelt that came in and did laundry, and Ella that came in and cooked, and then there was Lottie and Sally, were my two nannies. And they were like family, but yet they weren't. And it wasn't until many years later when that play came out, that really hit me, because that really kind of summed it up. I didn't think anything was wrong, you know, and it wasn't until...
But you came out and looked at it from somebody else's
perspective. Right.
Not yours.
Exactly.
It's different.
Exactly. But, I mean, there was no malice, no hatred. You know, so it was really kind of strange. And I think a lot of people that are not from the region kind of misunderstand that. They don't really see that. We tend to get stereotyped into a very solid, prejudiced, racist kind of camp. At least for me, now I can't speak for my parents, because there was obvious prejudice there.
Sure.
But they never passed that on. You know,
it was an unspoken word.
It was an unspoken thing. And there wasn't any, like I said, there wasn't any hatred. There wasn't any malice. And like I said, my parents raised us to believe that, look, these folks have been dealt a bad deal. And, you know, we should try to help. You know, that we can't... you know, they're human beings, all of that. I mean, there was anything that was what you would call pure racism involved with. And those are my earliest. As far as the civil rights movement, I do remember, now this is jumping up a little bit, I do remember when Martin Luther King was assassinated, that it was the only time that I remember my father actually bringing the gun into the house. There had been reports, and some of them exaggerated and some of them quite true, of some roaming gangs coming down Highway 41 from Chattanooga and causing some problems. And we lived right on Highway 41. There was no interstate at that time. And he was very concerned about that, because even though we weren't what you would call rich or wealthy, we lived in a nice home, in a row of nice homes along this older street. And I think he felt that we might be a target, and I remember that, but I was just curious. I don't remember being scared about it, but I remember seeing his fear and his concern about it. Whether it was justified, whether it was justified or not. But I do remember that. But it really wasn't until the latter part of the 60s that I really started to realize just the full breadth and scope of the prejudice and racism. Does exist. Still exists.
Sure does.
Today.
Yeah. Still does. I guess you and I are part of the baby boom. It says 4.3 million babies at the time, 1957. You know,
mm-hmm.
And it's just overwhelming. And now we're getting into the age where we're getting middle age. You know,
mm-hmm.
And that.